United States against Stittman is our next case this morning. Mr. Gutierrez.
Counsel.
May it please the court. Your Honors, we're here today to decide on whether an object can be a finger. I believe that this is a case where there were three bank robberies. Each of the bank robberies had...
Counsel, I'm particularly interested in what difference this makes. And the district court increased the guideline level by three. You say the right amount was two. And had the district judge agreed with you, the sentence actually imposed still would have been within the guideline range. So what difference does this make?
Well, it makes a difference in that if the guideline were lower, I think that the court might have considered the second argument, which I made, or actually argument number three, and that is the motion for downward departure.
There's no such thing as downward departure anymore.
Right.
Right. That's actually why I brought this up. In the world before Booker, we said that in the case of overlapping guideline ranges, which is what we're looking at here, the district
Correct.
Court really had to make it clear that the precise guideline range didn't matter. And if he said that, we were going to say we aren't going to resolve the dispute about whether it's A or B because he's already told us it doesn't matter.
Right.
After Booker, where the guidelines are not binding, but are just, well, guidelines, is that the rule we should still be following, or should we be saying if the sentence is inside the guideline range, whether the defense's position is right or the prosecutor's position is right, it really, since the judge isn't bound by the guideline range, why should we be fiddling with this?
Well, Judge, I believe that argument flips this thing on its head. Only because...
Well, there's no head to flip it on.
Only right? Because...
What I mentioned was a decision of this circuit. There's no provision in the guidelines or in the Supreme Court's jurisprudence talking about how the overlapping range situation is handled. The decision to which I'm referring is the United States against Mount. And the question I'm asking is whether United States against Mount is affected by Booker.
I believe, Judge, that the way that the courts have since then calculated a defendant's sentence under 3553 and its provisions have, in essence, been bridled, if you will, still by the guideline calculations.
And so are you saying that in an advisory capacity, if the range is... 60 to 75 versus a range of 65 to 80, that's going to influence the judge's choice of whether 70 is, quote, reasonable?
Well, we can get to the part of reasonableness.
I mean, that's essentially your argument, that if there's a mistake in the calculation of the range,
yes,
it still might affect the notion of reasonableness.
That's precisely
what would if the judge said, I'm just going to pick the middle of the range. I'm going to count
right.
the range and pick the
right.
middle. Then picking the range picks the sentence.
Picking a range picks the sentence, Judge. But
if the
imposing
judge is approaching it otherwise, that I'm going to think about these and then pick the sentence I think is appropriate, then picking the range doesn't pick the sentence. Maybe what we need is to have you and the United States file supplemental memos addressing the question whether United States against Mount, 966 Fed Second 262, should continue to be followed after Booker.
And while you make a note of that, I wonder if you could just clarify for me one very technical point. As I understand it, the only count of bank robbery for which the hand in the pocket issue comes up is count two.
That's correct. July 31st.
And he gets 70-month sentences on all three, each of those three counts to run concurrently.
That's correct.
So does that mean he gets a 70-month sentence on counts one and counts three, despite the fact that this enhancement doesn't correspond to that conduct, or what, or is that irrelevant? Somehow it's just all 70 months, even though only one time is involved?
That's correct, Judge. I think that...
Was any objection, was any thought given to saying, you know, notwithstanding that he served 70 months, I understand that, you know, with a concurrent sentence, but sometimes you pay attention to particular sentences anyway.
Right. In the case of three consecutive bank robberies, I didn't raise that issue. That could be, you know, arguing something that's irrelevant anyway.
Well, right. I mean, he's still going to get an assessment on each of the three accounts. He's still going to spend 70 months in prison. But sometimes it'll say, you know, 55 months on counts one and three, concurrently to 70 months on count two, and it just looks a little different.
Judge, I'm puzzled by your question on United States versus Miles. I'd really like to understand that question a little bit more. Is the court saying that
I'm not saying anything. I'm asking.
Right. Is the question suggesting
the holding of Mount is that when guideline ranges overlap and there's some dispute about which, when a sentence is within overlapping guideline ranges and there's a dispute about which range is the correct one, that the district judge's choice will be reviewed on appeal unless the judge says, I've decided I'm going to impose the same sentence whichever of these two ranges I pick. The question is whether that is still the appropriate approach after Booker, or whether we should instead flip the burden and say if the sentence is within either of the ranges, then there's no need to decide which range was the right one, unless the judge has said something along the lines of Judge Wood, that I'm picking this sentence in the middle of the range, or I'm picking this at the bottom of the range, and it now, you know, it now matters what the range is. But if the judge says, I'm just picking a reasonable sentence and using this to, you know, to think about, right? Let me put it another way. Under the guidelines, when the guidelines were binding, whether the finger in the pocket was the display of a dangerous weapon actually had some legal force. Now the judge could say, I'm adding two months to your sentence because a finger in the pocket is bad for tellers, and I think it's reasonable to add time to a sentence because of that. That's perfectly within the judge's power. It doesn't matter under Booker whether technically the finger in the pocket is the display of a dangerous weapon. It's something the judge is entitled to consider, and that makes me wonder whether we should get all steamed up about how it technically would be classified under the guidelines when it doesn't seem to affect the range. Now, the judge could say something along Judge Wood lines that would make it matter, but there's no contention here that he said anything like that. So that's the question, whether Mount should continue to be followed after Booker. And we'll give the parties 14 days to file simultaneous memoranda on that question.
Thank you, Judge.
Anyway, you can continue. You still got some time.
Well, then, since we're already along the Palladino line of discussion where we have to look to the words of...
Palladino problem here.
Pardon me?
Sure.
I think Judge Pallmeyer certainly knew she had discretion in this case.
Yes.
I think that, you know, the only issue really is the fact that the guidelines themselves make it clear in the commentary that it doesn't have to be an actual gun in the pocket or anything. It could be, you know, anything. It could be an apple that, you know, for some reason looked like a gun. And they also indicate that the concern is that if the teller, for example, looks at that bulge in the pocket and thinks, oh, my gosh, there's a gun, further violence could take place. Security guards could come rushing in. You know, other things could happen, which is why the enhancement is there. It's kind of more dangerous behavior.
I understand that part, Judge, but the commentary does say an object. So, and I'm not going to belabor that point since it appears to be that the bigger issue is whether the painting on the shuffleboard lines needs to be broadened or narrowed. And that is my only point. And okay. And that is that the guidelines themselves provide a grid work, which, you know, I believe that some some judges see the grid a little differently than other judges. That's all I'm saying. And before Booker, you know, we would fight over these little tiny points, whether the finger in the pocket is any more dangerous.
After Booker, the judge can add or subtract time without regard to the technical reading of the guidelines, which means that we should spend less time fretting about the technical reading of the guidelines.
In that subset of cases where either properly calculated guideline range on the table would include that sentence. Yeah. Certainly, if you can't get that sentence from a properly calculated guideline
then
range, then we're still going to worry about it. But yeah.
Thank you, Judge.
Thank you, Mr. Gutierrez. Mr. Collins.
May it please the court, counsel, Dan Collins on behalf of the United States. The three-level enhancement was appropriate because the defendant created the appearance that he had a gun. First, he said that he had a gun. Second, he motioned to his side where he had a bulge in his pants from his concealed hand, which he made by putting it in his pocket. I understand the defense wants to talk about the object as being something separate, but really the concealed hand is the object because it created the appearance that it was a gun.
And how was his hand in his pocket being, quote, brandished?
Well, Judge,
since that's the one ordinarily doesn't even think of brandishing a finger if I go bang, bang, bang like that, but the guideline does talk about brandishing something. And one would think that a gun in a pocket isn't being brandished, let alone a finger in a pocket.
Judge, I think
are we all in a deconstructionist world now and playing the role of Jacques Derrida?
Well, Judge, I believe the guideline talks about not only brandishing but also possessing a dangerous weapon. And I don't think there's any question from the record that this defendant created the appearance that he possessed
weapon. There is a real difference between somebody who possesses a gun and somebody who possesses a finger. We've all got fingers all the time. Well, most of us have fingers all the time. But not all of us have guns, and you can easily imagine that actually having a gun is worse than actually having a finger. And actually brandishing a gun is worse than having a gun, and so on. I mean, you know, the guidelines seem to have some sensible gradation of seriousness, which it does seem to me you're trying to collapse to turn fingers into guns and pockets into brandishing and so on. And I don't know why we should cooperate in collapsing these gradations.
I don't think it's a matter of collapsing, Judge. I think it's a matter of assessing what level of risk has been created by the defendant's conduct.
And actually having a gun is more risky than actually having a finger.
I would agree with that, Judge. But also, simply threatening death versus creating the appearance that you have a gun.
Actually having a gun is more dangerous than threatening with your finger.
Well, to using an objective analysis to a reasonable teller, that teller is not going to know the difference.
The teller will know the difference if you pull out an actual gun. That is more threatening than a finger in a pocket.
Well, either way, Judge, I believe the reasonable teller thinks that this person who's standing before him demanding money and threatening violence has a gun, and whether or not the teller can see the color of that gun, how it shines, or whether the teller just thinks that that person has a gun. Either way, that teller is in a heightened state of apprehension, and that there is
there is no doubt that on the hierarchy of things, a note accompanied by a threat is worse than a note not accompanied by a threat. But one would also think that in the hierarchy of things, a note accompanied by a threat and an actual display of a real weapon is worse than a note accompanied by a threat. Right? And what you want us to do is treat the threat and the real weapon as the same thing. And as I say, that collapses a distinction that seems to me, at least, and I think to the Sentencing Commission, important for sentencing policy.
But, Judge, I think
if you award the 3 points for the finger, there is no marginal deterrence for actually having the gun.
Well, Judge, it's a matter of what the appearance is that this defendant creates and the level of risk that he's bringing to the situation. And it's a matter of recognizing whether or not the defendant's conduct has heightened that risk. And I think that based on the record we have here, when this defendant looked at a teller and said, I have a gun, motioned that teller's attention to his side, where he had created a bulge to make it look like he had a gun, he created a heightened level of risk. And that's why the guidelines feel that a higher level enhancement is appropriate. That's why the district court felt that higher level enhancement was appropriate.
Well, actually, I think the question is whether the guidelines themselves were seeking to differentiate between the actual and the impression of, let's say, the gun that you're talking about, because although you can look at 3B, 2B, 3.1, et cetera, et cetera, if a dangerous weapon was brandished or possessed, and that sounds like there has to be a dangerous weapon, but then you go over to Application Note 2 and you discover that something closely resembling an instrument capable, you know, I always think of that as, you know, the toy gun situation or something. And I thought the issue here was whether, you know, the balled up fist in the pocket is an object closely resembling a gun. Now, maybe the Sentencing Commission was foolish not to draw a greater distinction between the real and the imagined. But isn't that our issue? Can the balled up fist be an object closely resembling a gun?
It is the issue, Judge, and I think the answer is yes. You know, what this defendant did was create the appearance that he had a gun, and that heightened the level of risk involved not only to the teller but to any passersby, to any other bank patrons, to bank security that responds, to the police that respond. It heightens the level, and I think that what the drafters of the guideline wanted to do was address the fact that this defendant's conduct is more dangerous than someone who merely makes a threat of death, and that's no question what this defendant did. The defendant's second issue in terms of how to calculate a prior conviction, the decision in Booker did not change the manner in which a district court calculates criminal history points, and so there should be no issue on the defendant's point. Lastly, the defendant talks about the sentence being unreasonable, but the fact is I think he confuses the district court's rejection of his argument about family circumstances with her failure to recognize her discretion. The district court absolutely recognized that she had discretion in imposing a reasonable sentence. She fully considered the defendant's argument, and she rejected it for very good reasons, reasons that this court has rejected arguments of similar nature. For those reasons, as well as those stated in our brief, I would ask that this court affirm the sentence of the district court. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much. And thank you, Mr. Gutierrez, for accepting the appointment and the help you have already been, and we hope soon will be, to the court. Memos are due in 14 days. Thank you very much. The case is under advisement. Our final case.